everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about human resources with HR professionals and those who support the profession. So we want to get rolling. Got a lot of really good information to cover. Can't wait for the conversation. So we'll jump into it. Dave Fowler, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thanks, Brian. Glad to be here.
If you would, hey, we're glad to have you for lunch and spend a little time. You got some really good stuff to give us some updates on. So if you would introduce yourself to our listeners, we'll kind of roll into what's top of mind for you.
Sure. My name is Dave Fowler. I've been with Equifax Workforce Solutions for a little over 29 years. My current position is Vice President of Product Strategy, which means I get involved with new products and integrating products that we acquire. And I-9 has been one of those things I've been working on for the last several years.
Nice. Dave, what's changed in 30 years? What's changed in I-9? And more specifically, where do you see I-9 going over just the next couple of years?
Well, I mean, the I-9 form started in November of 1986. So I was one of those people that started in 83, so I don't have an I-9 on file. Things that have changed is the form has changed several times. It's changed again now recently. On May 8th, a new one was released, and employers need to start using it as of May 7th. They can use it anytime right now, but they must start using it on May 7th. And it's getting interesting with the information they're asking to collect these days.
Nice. What's the biggest change for HR pros out there listening? What's some of the new documents or just new process? What's some of the things that they have to do after, let's say post-May, that they weren't considering prior to that?
Well, the Form I-9 itself has gone from a 5-page document to now a 9-page document. The form itself, which is part of that, most of that documentation is instructions, but the form now has gone from a 1-page form to a 2-page form. So double the paper storage if you're doing this on paper. There's a lot of nice things in the instructions that help you understand how to fill the form out. I used to say it was the most difficult single-page form to fill out in the world. Now it's the most difficult 2-page form to fill out. But there's some new information being captured, such as the employee's email address and telephone number, which is brand new. There's also more complexity where the employee attests to their citizenship or immigration status, particularly concerning an alien employee. So that's all coupled with what's going on at the Customs and Border Protection Group inside DHS, which is moving to an electronic Form I-94 process. So, for example, some people that come into the country at an air or seaport, as of, I believe it's April 26th, will no longer receive a paper I-94, which is one of the documents that an alien can present with a foreign passport for I-9 purposes. Well, because the I-94 number may not be available, or because they need to verify this information through E-Verify, which is a whole different subject, is the I-9 now is asking the alien employee, if they enter an I-94 number, to also enter their foreign passport number and what's called a country of issuance, which is about one of 438 different countries you can enter. That allows E-Verify to validate this information.
Nice. Dave, real quick, you mentioned paper storage, and I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the pros and cons of paper storage versus digital storage. What's that world look like these days?
Well, being in the electronic application business, of course, I'm pro-electronic I-9. And what I see a lot is, with paper I-9s, it's easy to make mistakes and leave information off. There's no checks and balances unless you have, two- or three-person review on these things. The other issue is that I-9s have a finite life, so that once an employee terminates, the employer has to keep that I-9 for, you know, a little bit longer, 1 year after termination. But the rule is even more complicated than that. It says you must keep an I-9 for 3 years or 1 year after employment terminates, whichever is longer. Well, if you keep the I-9 for longer than it's required, you also retain the liability. So I think it's pretty funny when I talk to clients that take their old I-9s, box them up, and send them off to a paper storage facility and pay them to store liability. But nobody wants to take the time to sit down and go through all of these pieces of paper and figure out where are the errors, how do we fix it, or how do I get rid of this paper.
What's the, Dave, just for everyone that might be new or even some of the ecosystem that doesn't know the E-Verify versus I-9 world, where does E-Verify, where does that world really play, and where does I-9 play from a process perspective?
Okay. First of all, with the I-9, you can complete it any time after an offer of employment has been made and accepted. The rule for completion is there's two sections you have to worry about. Section 1 is for the employee. Section 2 is for the employer. Section 1 must be completed by the employee on or before the first day of work. Section 2 must be completed no later than 3 days after, 3 business days after the employee's first day of work for pay. So it's called the Thursday rule. So if you hire somebody on Monday, you got to complete Section 2 of the I-9 by Thursday. Now, where E-Verify fits in is that, you know, I guess this all started where the federal government can fine employers for errors on their I-9s and for hiring people who are not authorized to work in the U.S., but the employer had no way to really validate that information. Well, now E-Verify is a government program. It's free of charge to use it, that allows an employer to verify the employee is authorized to work in the U.S. after the Form I-9 has been completed. And you're supposed to create what's called an E-Verify case within that 3-day period after the employee starts work for pay.
Nice. Well, let me kind of go a little bit of a different direction here, Dave. So in the future, because of the digital and all the changes we've seen from a regulatory standpoint, where do you see 2 or 3 years down the road or 5 years? What's like a big change that people need to be thinking about or maybe talking about?
Well, I think that's a relatively short period of time in government timeframes. I think I heard yesterday from a friend of mine that told me he thought there was a bill being worked on in the federal legislature that would eventually eliminate the I-9 form. But I think that's probably a longer-term process or goal. Right now, I think what we're going to see is more and more states requiring E-Verify, and with the immigration bill that's now been circulated in D.C., I think we're going to see at some point within the next few years mandatory E-Verify for all employers.
Nice. Hey, Dave, before we get to, because I really want to get into the immigration bill and your thoughts on it. Years ago, this is 20 years ago, we had to make copies of documents, or at least I remember with the I-9, you had to make copies of the Social Security and driver's license, passport, etc. And as I remember, this dates me, but you had to keep them separate, like there were separate folders for certain things that couldn't kind of go together. What is that world? What's changed in that world? And how does one actually, from a process perspective, get the documentation, keep it straight, et cetera?
William, that's a couple of questions in there. Let me answer the simplest one first, and that is the idea of keeping the Form I-9 and any supporting documents separate from an employee's, you know, the employee file. It's not a requirement, but it's a recommended practice because of what's called the plain sight rule, so that if an employer is audited, say by ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement folks, and the I-9s are stored in the employee's employment file, once they look into that file, anything they find, they can use. So it's kind of opening the kimono, if you will. So most folks want to keep the I-9s separate so that they don't run into those kinds of situations, because there could be documentation in that file that would show that the employer maybe knew that they had employed an unauthorized worker. Regarding the copies, the copies are not required for employers to make, but there are some exceptions. For example, Colorado has a state law that requires the employer to complete an attestation form, basically saying that you didn't commit a fraud or modify any of the documents, and you have to retain the employee's documents, copies of their documents used for the Form I-9. So that's an anomaly. If you do make copies of supporting documents, the immigration law currently says you need to do it for all employees. So you have to treat all employees the same and not be discriminatory. Now, E-Verify throws another variation into this, because if you use E-Verify, there are what's called photo matching documents, or documents that are subject to the E-Verify photo matching tool. The photo matching tool was put in several years ago to combat complaints about the E-Verify program. In other words, the complaint was, look, E-Verify just validates data. It doesn't know if the picture on the form being presented really belongs to the right person. So there was problems with false documents that had real person's information on it, but somebody had posted put their own picture on the document to make it look real. So there are four documents that are currently part of the photo matching program, which are the U.S. passport, U.S. passport card, the EAD, and permanent resident card, because those photos for those documents are on file at DHS, or Homeland Security. So if an employee uses one of those documents to fill out Form I-9 and the employer uses E-Verify, the last step in the verification process is that E-Verify will present the photo that should be on the document to the employer, and the employer needs to say, either the photos match or they don't. So if they do match, then everything goes through, the employee's authorized to work. If they don't, it's a mismatch situation, and then the employee has to be notified and given the opportunity to get this fixed.
Nice. So, Dave, let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, we're on with Dave Fowler. So, Dave, I mean, we're into some really, like, kind of the heavy-duty blocking and tackling of this. Where does the very prominent conversation of social media play into the whole I-9, kind of everything we're talking about and what you do? Where does social media play into that conversation?
Well, I think social media gets to be kind of touchy with the Form I-9, because the way the laws and the regulations are is the data on the Form I-9 is not supposed to be used for any other purpose or disclosed to a third party or anybody who really doesn't have any business seeing it. So if they're not involved in the E-Verify process or filling out the Form I-9, that data is not supposed to be shared. So I'm not really sure how you would link in social media with this information.
Gotcha. Dave, I want to get your take on rules violations that you see in the world's exempt versus non-exempt. Like where the world of I-9 and some of this documentation, where do you see, okay, in the hourly world, these are the things that kind of, here's what gets broken over here. In the professional world, here's kind of what gets broken over here, et cetera. Take the audience into what you see, the difference especially between those two worlds.
But William, I don't know that there's really that much of a difference with the two types of employees, other than the error rate. I'll tell you this, the error rate on Form I-9 for paper forms is usually 50%+. So that's, and the average fine if you go through an ICE audit ends up being about $950 per I-9 form. So that becomes a huge liability. What I see as the big issue is when you're doing paper forms is who is filling out the form and are they trained and do you have a policy manual and those kinds of things that tell people how to react in certain situations. Now, and one, for example, one of the things you'll find is there are a variety of Social Security cards. Some of them are restricted, meaning they can't be used for employment. Well, the most common set of documents for filling out the I-9, at least Section 2, which the employee has to present documents that prove their identity and their authorization to work in the U.S. So a driver's license and Social Security card are the most common documents. And a lot of times, folks who don't know will accept a restricted Social Security card as a valid document, and that becomes an error on the form and is subject, you know, it's a finable offense.
Wow. Let's get into this immigration reform and immigration law that's actually been circulated. I want to get your take. First of all, take the audience into what you see, and then secondly, how do you think it'll play out? How do you think it'll shake out?
Okay. Well, I hope I don't get myself in trouble talking about this. But first of all, I don't know that of anybody I've talked to, either in or out of the government, that truly believes we have a chance to move 11 or 12 million or whatever the number is, those people out of the country that came in here illegally. I just don't think that's a doable thing, and I also don't think it fits with the heart and soul of the country and our culture. So that being said, that means those folks are going to stay here, and then the issue becomes, okay, what's the process you're going to use to allow them to stay? And I think that's what the immigration bill is trying to struggle with. Bottom line, in the way I look at this, and what frustrates me a little bit, is that I'm not sure the motives of the people putting the bill together are the right motives. And I'll tell you what I mean by that is I think the goal for both sides of the aisle appears to be getting votes. And I don't think that's really what we should be focused on when we're thinking about fixing a system in the country, such as an immigration bill. So I've said this for several years, so I'll say it here. Why not? My take on it is I would think that anybody that came into the country illegally, they register with the government, so we know who they are, they get documentation, and they can stay in the country. But I would be an advocate of saying, if you came in illegally and broke the law to get here, you can stay now, but you can't vote, and you can't hold public office, and you can't be appointed to a position either in or out of the government that allows you to set policy. So I think if you took the vote off the table, and that means they wouldn't become real citizens, you know, full citizens, they would be like a legal permanent resident or something like that, I think that changes the dynamics, and I think that would get more people on board with this immigration bill.
Well, Dave, next time I'm in St. Louis, we'll go have a beer. I have a drastically different take on this, and a lot of it has to do with being American Indian. Everyone's an immigrant. Like my personal take on this. There isn't anybody that's in this country that isn't an immigrant of sorts. Everyone came from somewhere else at one point. Might be 13 generations ago, but at one point they were an immigrant. I would like to actually tax everybody. So I would accept everybody that's here, assuming a couple of things. National ID, everyone gets fingerprinted, DNA, retina scans. So that we have documentation on every single person here. As long as you're not a criminal or crazy, then you can stay here, but you pay a higher tax rate, but you get all the full benefits. So whatever our tax rate is, double it. And you pay a higher tax rate to be here. So if you really want to come and get the American dream, come and get it. As long as you're not crazy or a criminal, you know, everyone else came here for that reason. Why not? I just want to tax you. You can vote. You can do all that stuff. As long as I've got documentation on you, hey, come on. I mean, doors are open. They've always been open-ish. We've always hated immigrants. Every immigrant group has always hated the other immigrant group that has come behind them. So, I mean, there's nothing new there from a historical perspective. But I think it would, for me, I think just make everyone the same, but just tax them more. As long as we can get to the heart of, if you're crazy or a criminal, then we just don't want you. You're country of origin should keep you because you're a criminal or you're crazy. So I have just a slightly different perspective on that.
I don't disagree with people that are criminals and that kind of thing not being allowed to stay. I guess if I look at the last election we had, the presidential election, at the macro level, it was almost a 50-50 split. But that's where the country is, than having 11 or 12 million more voters. They're going to be able to decide the direction the country goes. And those folks broke the law to get here. So that's why I say I don't think giving them the vote and let them control what the country does is necessarily in our best interests. I think people that come here through the normal process legally, should be able to attain citizenship. But
yeah,
I think there's a lot of folks out there that don't like the idea of letting someone break the law and then giving them this benefit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Take us into the world of visas. I think a lot of people that listen to the call might not know kind of where we are, like H-1B visas, et cetera. There's a lot of hubbub out in Silicon Valley around the talent shortage, and we don't have enough, and we need to form our own PAC and go and change the laws, et cetera. What's your take on kind of the world of visas, the process, and where do you see that going?
Well, let me start by saying I'm not a visa expert. That's a whole different ballgame. But a couple general things. One is in the immigration bill, they do talk about a new W-type visa for this guest worker program. And having driven down, the Coast Highway in California and seen all of the agriculture that's out there and the work that those folks are doing, that's a whole different world. And I can kind of understand that, there are immigrants that come in that are willing to do that work, and we're happy to have them do it, I think, because we like the food that's grown out there. Other issues have to do with, I guess, the H-1B is where you're going to bring in most of the higher educated folks, and perhaps, we have a too low of a threshold there. Maybe we need to have more of those highly skilled individuals coming into the country, and we get more innovation and those kinds of things out of that. But I'm certainly not an expert in that area, and I wouldn't want to pretend to be.
Fair enough. Tell us about what you see in the worlds of big data and the world that you play in terms of E-Verify and I-9. Like, where do you see those worlds crisscrossing or intersecting?
Well, the same group at Homeland Security, it's called the inside of Homeland Security now, there's a group called the USCIS, which is the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Group. I think of them as basically the benefits group of the old INS. There's a division in there called the Verification Division that controls the Form I-9 and E-Verify. Well, they're getting more and more data at E-Verify about individuals. They just told me, I chair this Immigration Committee for the American Payroll Association, and we just met Tuesday. We meet once a month, and we have representatives from ICE and USCIS attending. They now say that they have 440,000 employers involved in E-Verify that represent 1.3 million hiring sites around the country. Well, that's a whole lot of data that they're being able to accumulate there as far as E-Verify goes. And a couple of the fields they're going to ask for now are going to be an email address and a telephone number. Those are optional. However, the word optional doesn't appear on the form itself. It's buried in the instructions. Well, what's going to happen is that E-Verify, DHS, wants to communicate with the employee if there happens to be a mismatch. I pushed back on that on the phone yesterday. I don't think it's really create a relationship with these folks. because so far this year, I think, or since October 1, they've done about 12 million transactions. I don't think DHS's goal was to become the best friend of those 12 million people. I think what they're getting at is if there's a mismatch and they have the employee's email address, they want to email the employee and say, hey, did you know you got a mismatch on E-Verify? And I think the goal there is going to be to help prevent employers from misusing the E-Verify data. In other words, in some cases, the employee doesn't know the process. If they get a mismatch, the employer says, sorry, I can't hire you, and sends the employee away. And I think this is DHS's way of combating that. But anyway, the whole big data thing is really a concern to a lot of employers and immigration attorneys we work with, in that what you're seeing now is they have a group, DHS or E-Verify does, has a separate group that's looking at this data and mining it and trying to figure out which employers are using the data incorrectly, are using the system incorrectly. In other words, are they sending in the same Social Security number multiple times, you know, during a week or whatever the number they're using is? Are they are employees getting a mismatch and none of these employees are getting referred to the government agency to get corrected? And they're doing desk audits and actually visits to employers where they find these anomalies. And employers are getting a little worried. It's a scary thing when you get an email, a phone call, or a letter from Homeland Security wanting to come talk to you. So I think that's kind of overall what's got people a little spooked. And then once you start sharing that information between Homeland Security divisions, such as the Immigration and Customs Enforcement people, that's what's got employers a little scared.
Well, Dave, we're just about out of time here. And so final question, what's some good kind of resources or places people can go to just stay up to date on all the things you've been talking about the last 30 minutes?
Well, I would point you towards the DHS website and for E-Verify, and also there's an I-9 Central website there. I would tell you to go to www.dhs.gov/E-Verify. And there you can find information on the E-Verify program. There's a link on the right to I-9 Central, which is more information. And all the documentation for E-Verify and the I-9 form are published there.
Well, that is perfect. We really appreciate you coming on and give us some great information. And, folks, I hope that everybody has a good rest of the day. We are out of here.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town about the shack outside the games. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.